Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome again here to Circles of Change in our special Tucson Festival of Books show. We, of course, had a great segment just beforehand with John Davis from Arizona Lithographers. I thought it'd be important we're kind of reverse engineering the process of making a book to talk with Ted Larson from Night Horses Fine Art and Publishing. Great to have you in the studio, Ted.
Thank you.
You bet. Let me give a brief introduction. A native of Flint, Michigan, Ted is fourth generation in a family of tool and die designers, blacksmiths, Danish shipbuilders, and talented skilled trade professionals who immigrated to the United States at the beginning of the automobile industry. Ted spent 25 years as an automotive and manufacturing engineer and is quite comfortable tackling mechanical, electrical, and systems engineering challenges. Ever the artisan, he rebuilt 35 Corvette sports cars, including several which received national recognition, and given a passion for and background in ocean-going sailing, has restored also classic wooden sailboats. Relocating to New England in the 90s for 12 years, Ted was drawn to restoring antique furniture, turn-of-the-century farm equipment, and designing and building an authentic post and beam barn to match his family's 1850s historic home. As part of Ted's professional circles of change during that same time frame, he completed a degree in architecture to complement his engineering studies. And since moving to Tucson in 2004, and always the outdoorsman since his youth, Ted chose to blend his industrial design and engineering background with a shift into environmental design. He's fascinated by the history, people, landscape, and products of the Southwest, and is an avid reader of all sorts of books, history to biographies to mysteries. His expanding Damascus steel knife collection, in fact, is sold here under the brand of Hat Creek Tea and capitalizes thus on his lifetime accomplishments as an engineer, technician, metal and woodworker, and an artist. But today we're here to talk about, Ted, your role in books, particularly as it fits in with the Tucson Festival books. So what is your company Night Horses all about?
Well, Night Horses is a publishing company that many circles people call a boutique publish company. We publish books about artists with a unique perspective and compelling authority, and we're not concerned about the quantity of books that we do, just the quality.
And this is here today. We're going to be speaking, of course, after yourself to Jack Kowalik, who's the photographer you've interfaced with, and then lead us all up to closing our show with a segment on Bill Mumy. This is actually the second book for your company then.
That's correct. We were here 1 year ago with Alan Martin's narrative art book.
And if I recall, Alan, of course, was one that actually was featured here on our show, and you got the chance to kind of pick up and help him publish his work. But each of these books you've now been involved with are very different projects, aren't they?
They are. Alan's book, Alan didn't want to say anything, and anybody that knows Alan will have a laugh out of that right now, but he didn't want any writing. He wanted a picture book and limited text from there. And Bill's book, being the retrospection that it is, it has photography and design and painting and a lot of things that were on his mind while he was putting these things together that he wrote inside the book.
The mere fact you started your company, though, was this something you always wanted to do, was getting into publishing books, or how did this come about?
No, Night Horses was an accident. And it was established in March of 2010, a year ago. And the objective was to publish no more than one book. It was an idea that somebody had to do a book but didn't know how to do a book. And like I have said in the past, I didn't know that I couldn't do it. And I told him that I wanted to try that in a discussion over a cup of coffee. And Alan didn't even remember that he had asked me. But it had been on my mind from the moment he said he'd like to do a book.
And if I recall, it was one of these well, how hard can this be? And you looked at the calendar and you backed it up and said, gee, there's this thing called the Tucson Festival of Books. And you had, what, like 3 months to pull off that book?
That's right. We had 97 days.
97 days, to be
and
specific.
And we, my life in the past, one of my lives in the past, lived and died by Gantt charts and critical path planning and how things stacked on top of each other to make them come out at the end and all of the details be there in the same place at the same time. And so it the concept of putting all the pieces together for a book seemed almost identical to that.
Well, it sounds like it on the surface from a visual standpoint that it would be identical, but are you not throwing in, though, this complicated human being called the artist that brings with them their own ideas and how it was you came to, what, know how to manage these inspiring individuals, but at the same time give them the freedom to make the book the way they needed it to be for their own heart?
That's right, and it's a truly a division of labor situation in that, you know, if you... I don't recognize myself in this venue as being artistic. And so I facilitate what they want to go forward. But really, I'm just a person that organizes and put things in line and making sure that the details are all done and that the pieces line up. And that in the end, they get what they want. When we began to research the idea of doing a book and we looked at the books that were in between the two doors at Barnes & Noble and called the people that had done those books, and these are the books that I tell you that they're for $2 and $4, and I thought that'd be really disappointing if you put all this time into a book and they sold it for $4. And the people that did those books all told me that they didn't get what they wanted. And I wanted to make sure that that didn't happen. And now we've, with our second book, I believe that we did that. That one idea of not producing any more than one book rose up to produce a model of beautiful and unusual books that have personal connections throughout all phases of the concept and manufacturing all the time, doing all the work inside the city limits of Tucson just because we could.
And that's with, of course, with John Davis in partnership with his whole team there at Arizona Lithographers.
And Jack Kulowick right downtown, where on some of these we marched the paintings right down 6th Avenue because we couldn't get him in a car.
And took him right to his studio.
That's correct.
I want to press back, if you don't mind my taking you, though, there. I mean, it's one thing to manage the details and the Gantt charts, but still to provide these artists the freedom to create these works. I mean, were there not some times, though, when you could see, oh, my gosh, there's 50 shades of blue and we need to get them to decide on the two that we need? And how did you orchestrate those dynamics with these creative individuals?
Well, some things happened like that, and that exact thing happened with Alan, and that we were trying his signature blue hummingbird on the front, and we were trying to determine the color, and the person that we were working with at AZ Litho handed him a color palette that had 600 blues in it, and it was, no, we can't do that, and and let's have 5. And then with Bill here, I was able to refine that even more, and I really stayed out of it, but Bill always asked, and when it was time, he would look over his shoulder and say, well, which do you like? And I remember in particular, we were working with some stripes and some wagon wheels that were ghosts in the page, and he said, well, I'm going to leave this one to you. You decide if you think we should go there. And when he asked that question, then I made a decision.
Yeah, that's right. And that's what a partnership is all about when you're trying to be particularly in that creative space.
That's absolutely right.
But it had to be a unique, of course, our listeners are going to get to meet Bill later here on the show. I mean, Bill himself is being an industrial designer and a creator that managed big projects. Were there those moments where perhaps he still wanted to be in charge, like he must have been throughout many steps of his career, but really then deferring to you?
There were a couple of times when I said, "Bill, we got to land the plane," and so we did that. But other than that, you know, his whole goal was to make it look beautiful, and I knew that. And when you know that that's what's in his heart, which was so obvious, then you had to continue with it until it was done. There was never any doubt that I should just curb it at that point because we didn't have the time.
For those of you that just tuned in, we're speaking with Ted Larson from Night Horses, which is a fine art and book publishing company. What's leading up to, later in our show, meeting Bill Mumy, who's the artist behind Ted's second book now in this capacity, The Art of Mumy, which is going to be here. It is available here at the Tucson Festival of Books here on March 12th and 13th, as well as on BillMumy.com, as well as NightHorses.com. Ted, I mentioned in the introduction that you pursued from your engineering and architecture degree and then also some landscape architecture. How do you think those studies are manifesting themselves in this pursuit you've got now of doing book publishing?
One of the reasons that I went into the landscape architecture design field was that so many times the architecture was left naked. The design was put out on a scraped piece of ground, and people thought that it was over. Mm-hmm. And when you look at some of the greats that I studied at McIntosh, where he not only did the landscape and chose the trees and the hard surfaces and designed the andirons for the fireplace and the drapes and the furniture, he did everything. And so I thought that maybe it was important to try to pull those elements along. And in totality, that's what I'm doing in these projects, is to try to reach out and not just figure out how we can make this book for $11, but how we can make it the best book that we can make for $11.
Yeah, from a cost standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
The work that you're doing for the artist then doesn't stop, though, when these children are born, we'll say, but also now guiding that whole process of distribution, the leveraging now of the communication internet technologies. Tell us some of those stories that have come your way or you've had to stumble around and learn in the process.
Well, again, when you contract work and like the contract work that we did with another source for our website to make it with the ultimate search engine optimization work that we did with Alan's working on Bill's. In the process, we had to try to pull things up 10 days to meet an earlier deadline that would do something that was the right thing for Bill and where he spoke with the Friends of Western Art last week. And in order to do that, we missed a date on the website. And it really wasn't important that the website have all the functionality. You needed to be able to take people's money, and that was all there was to it. So I sat down that night and built a website that would take money and put it in my bank account, and I did it in 4 hours. And we sold books that day off of that. And it's not the prettiest site, but it only had to be functional for 10 days. And now we're on to the next move, and the SEO is right, and we moved on. And so I knew how to do something that got us to the end result for that period of time, and we could sell books and move ahead, but we never would have been able to do that if we hadn't done this work here in the United States. If we had moved it offshore or had somebody else do it, there would never have been the personal connection that allowed us to move the whole project up 10 days just because it was the right thing for Bill.
Yeah, and that's the whole nuance and opportunity to partner, to really build that sense of community.
In what we do, creating the book is only the beginning of the journey for us. And we want to build an avid audience of readers and that are enriched by the work that we do, and that because of that, the people that were involved in the project got to do something extraordinary. The man that printed this and worked on this press was, I always say he was working on a garage door opener manual. I don't know what it was, but it sure seemed boring to me until we got to see this wonderful book with a lion on the cover that's just dynamic. And you could tell that we made a difference for that worker, that employee, for that period of time, that he got to do something that I know he went home and told his wife, and I know he told his kids that he printed a book with a lion on the cover of it today. It had to happen.
It had to happen. Ted, the process of, we mentioned that you're a publishing organization of publishing books, but now also assisting artists taking their work to what would we call it, a virtual gallery at this point in time, because perhaps the art gallery model of moving artwork isn't what it used to be in the past. So talk to us about that virtual gallery.
Well, like so many other things now that a short period of time ago were different than where they are, I thought maybe we could look at this gallery in a different light, where we could say, by the quantity of viewers, that we come up with a larger number of buyers. So it, as a number, we had in last month, we had 90,000 people come to the site in a month. And in the process of those 90,000, if you couldn't get 10% of them to walk in the door of a gallery on any given month, it's just not physically possible. Now, they're not all buyers, but it gives you a higher percentage of buyers because they're people that are interested. And when you look at those numbers, yeah, there are people that were doing a research project on lions and ended up with us. And that's okay, because they may have seen something that they told somebody else about. But it gives us a larger quantity of viewers to go forward with. And I see that as a dynamic shift in how art is viewed, not just in person, but online.
Mm-hmm. You were telling me here recently of a client that picked up on Alan Martin's site that you had brought up in Alan's book, but that actually they're coming down to visit the studio. You might want to share that story about really the power of the web in the mix.
Right. The interesting point was they came to the studio in the hopes that they would meet Alan, and they had a Giclée in mind that they wanted to purchase, and the work, it belongs to a museum. And so they wanted to print. And they had seen it online and worked online, and they were a mid-20s successful professional couple. And when they got to the studio and began the discussion, and I handed them a book, and they looked through the book, and they couldn't find the work in the book. They couldn't find the one that was their favorite. But when we handed them the mouse and they put the site up on Alan's 65-inch TV, with a few keystrokes, they were able to determine that that's the one that they wanted.
Right.
And so it was very powerful. And I thought that these folks, being half my age, buy so many things online that they were so much more comfortable viewing it that way than when they had a printed copy of something in their laps that had the work in it, but they couldn't find it. And it reinforced for me why we have to go after people's ability to view these things beautifully like this. Jack Kulok is a very integral part in that, because how he does the work allows us to put it up on a site so that people can view it in the best possible way, but so that it isn't stolen by somebody that might want to use it and print it on a placemat for McDonald's.
Yeah, in fact, you're going to meet Jack, so stick with us, folks. He'll come up next after Ted to tell us about his role as the photographer that really provided the medium for these books to be published. Ted, your comment is that all this information on the web obviously has been encrypted, so no one could lift it. But there are a lot of people that bring up sites that don't do that to their intellectual property.
That's right. We had somebody call the other day that was had a discussion about, well, and they offhandedly mentioned that, gee whiz, I couldn't grab anything off your site there, and how interesting that was. And it made me think that wasn't really what they wanted to tell me, which meant they were trying to thieve from me right before they even called. But
isn't that something? Well, you printed Alan Marden's book, The Narrative Art of Alan Marden, last year, and this year it's The Art of Mumy, which people can, listeners, please do stop by here today at the
Booth
Tucson
Booth 117.
That's right, Booth 117, to visit Night Horses and their two offerings. What kind of projects do you have coming up next?
Well, we have other ideas of things. One of the other things we've got today, too, is we, last year we had so many kids come to the booth, and we handed out 750 little cards that had horses on it. This year we have a coloring book, and we hope everybody will stop by and pick up a Night Horses coloring book. It was a great project with the idea of something else for the kids to do at this show. And we have some other ideas for books. We've got a discussion going about a book about the antics of a dog, a fox terrier, up in Sheridan, Wyoming, and then also a book that's a children's book that's a discussion of a flying horse that was a story that I heard from a Native Crow shaman in Cody, Wyoming, 2 years ago.
So there's always something that's coming right behind that.
That's correct.
That's great. Well, Ted Larson, and your efforts to be part of our show here today, we really appreciate it. Of course, you're critical in that segue between John Davis and his team at Arizona Lithographer, to Jack, to Bill Mumy, who we're going to hear later in the show. Thanks so much for joining us here, and all the best with your venture here at the Tucson Festival of Books.
Thank you, Zara.
Very good. Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.